When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast. I'm Keith Caulfield, Managing Director, Charts and Data Operations at Billboard.
And I'm Katie Atkinson, Billboard's Executive Digital Director, West Coast.
How's it going, Katie?
Good. How about yourself?
How's your Taylor Swift week looking?
Oh, man. I mean, it's looking very Taylor-y.
Tailor-made for
it's
you?
It's tailored to me.
Well, we'll be talking all about Taylor in just a second, because as always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Today on the show, we've got chart news on how Hozier gets his first number one on the Billboard Hot 100.
Friend of the podcast.
Friend of the podcast. As Too Sweet rises to the top of the list. How friend of the podcast Sabrina Carpenter visits the Hot 100's top 10 for the first time as Espresso brews up a number 7 debut. Oh. Future and Metro Boomin's We Still Don't Trust You bows at number one on the Billboard 200 just a few weeks after We Don't Trust You debuted at number one, while Linkin Park's first ever greatest hits album, Paper Cuts, starts in the top 10. And we'll talk about just how big Taylor Swift's new album, The Tortured Poets Department, is shaping up to be as we await its expected debut at number one on the Billboard 200 next week. One of those few times where I can say, yeah, I'm fairly confident it's going to be number one.
Oh, wow. Keith's making a full-blown
a
prediction.
Bold forecast. short of some like Titanic thing happening.
I have no idea what it would be, honestly.
I mean,
I don't want to think the worst.
That's what I do when I think these things. I'm like, you never know.
And even that wouldn't.
And even that is just like, I mean, probably not.
We feel confident. Wow, a Keith prediction. Let's take it. Also on the show, we'll talk a little bit more about Taylor's new album, including the video for the lead single Fortnite, which co-stars her collaborator Post Malone. Plus, we got a mini Spice Girls reunion over the weekend. We'll tell you all about the five girls coming together for Victoria Beckham's 50th birthday party in just a minute. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts.
All right, let's do the chart chat. First up, Hozier scores his first number one on the Billboard Hot 100 Songs chart as his gone viral hit turned streaming hit and now turned developing radio hit, Too Sweet, rises 2-1. He previously topped out at number two on the list with his breakthrough hit, Take Me to Church, in late 2014 and early 2015. Congratulations, Hozier.
That's very cool. We actually, the last time we had him on the podcast, it was to talk to him about having a number one album on the Billboard 200.
I think that was, what, Wasteland Baby?
Yeah, 2019, yeah. I think, when I looked it up. Yeah.
I think that was his first number one album, too.
Yes, it was. It was only, at this point, number one album.
Wow.
Yep.
So now he can say he's been number one on both charts.
That's very cool. And just completely a little bit out of left field, but also as we've been speaking about on this podcast over the past few months, unexpected and also very expected because it fits in the vibe of the Teddy Swims and the Benson Boones and the Noah Kahans and all that.
Right time, right place, right artist, right song.
Yep.
Right everything.
It all happens.
It's lovely when it happens.
It's too sweet.
It's too sweet. It's just too sweet. So in the week ending April 18th in the United States, of course, according to Luminate, Too Sweet drew 35.6 million streams. That was actually down 3%. Had 14.1 million in radio airplay audience impressions, up 136%.
Yeah.
And sold 6,000 downloads, and that was down 17%. It's number one on the streaming songs chart, number five on the digital song sales chart, and it debuted at number 42 on the radio songs chart. So while it's just getting started on the radio, it is still a very big hit in terms of streams and sales.
I feel like that's the part of the puzzle that... like that basically the Teddy Swims and Benson Boone's super success with their songs set up for Hozier. Mm. It was like, I feel like the AC pop radio, adult pop radio, all that was like ready to put this, like slot this in because they knew how much their listeners loved those other songs. Like that's yeah. what it feels like.
It also helps that there's actually a, like, it's not, like, it actually has, like, a great beat. It's got a fun hook.
It's a great song. Yeah. I mean, to your point, like, all these things had to conspire to make this happen. This song is so good, the lilting chorus. And then listening to the lyrics, like, they're fun lyrics. It's very much like a it's not you, it's me sort of song.
Right.
But I think that it's, like, Hozier's so deserving of this moment, and this song is really great.
I've probably said this before, but to me, the bass line kind of reminds me of Michael Jackson.
So you told me that before I heard the song. Like, you said that on the podcast before I'd even listened to the song. No, not ruined. It's just like I would not have picked up on that in the least. Like, and then when I listened to it, I was like, oh, I guess I can see that. But like, you had to make a leap. Yeah. It's not like it's a dance floor, you know, banger.
It's just there's something to the bump, bump, bump. Bum, 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 which is reminiscent of Beat It. But then it's also reminiscent of a million other songs.
It is. So good.
So friend of the podcast, as I said, Hozier was born in Ireland. And this is the first Irish artist to hit number one on the Hot 100 since Sinead O'Connor topped the chart in 1990 with her Prince cover, Nothing Compares to You. Hozier is only the second solo male Irish artist to have a number one in America, following Gilbert O'Sullivan in 1972 with Alone Again Naturally.
Hmm. Those are fun facts.
Well, that was from Gary.
Okay, so thanks, Gary.
Staying with the Hot 100, friend of the podcast, Sabrina Carpenter gets her first top 10 hit as Espresso debuts at number 7. She debuted this song at her first performance at Coachella's first weekend.
Yeah, she put it out the night before her Coachella weekend one and then played it for me.
Okay, so it actually did.
In the crowd.
It came out properly.
Yeah, and the music video and everything. It was all out. I had listened and watched multiple times before I saw it on stage. Like, it felt like a lived-in hit already when I saw her perform it.
Well, it enters with 19.8 million streams, 5.1 million in airplay audience, and it sold 4,000 copies. She's also in the top 40 with her first Hot 100 top 40 charting hit, Feather, which rises to a new peak of number 21 this week. And it earlier hit number one on the pop airplay chart. And that was her first number one there.
I love it. Everything's coming up Sabrina.
I mean, it's taken a moment.
It has. So we've spoken with her at least twice for the podcast. The first time was just me. Or actually, you know what? Maybe Jason spoke to her even before
potentially.
But it was when she was still like on Girl Meets World, which was like the Boy Meets World spinoff show.
Oh, wow.
She was the co-star on that show. And that's like, so she came from Disney Channel with that show. But I remember her being so smart, and she must have been like 16 or something, just smart as a whip. Her music back then, really great, really poppy. It was so obvious that she was had the makings of a star. So it's nice to see all of this play out. And I feel like for some people, it might feel like, oh, Taylor Swift threw her on her tour and overnight success. This is not an overnight success story. This girl has been grinding
for a long time. We're talking
like 8 years here. Yeah.
Well, next, Future and Metro Boomin's second collaborative album, We Still Don't Trust You, debuts at number one on the Billboard 200 albums chart with 127,500 equivalent album units earned. It's the sequel project to the pair's We Don't Trust You, which opened at number one on the April 6th dated chart. And that album actually rises 4 to 3 on the chart this week. So with We Still Don't Trust You arriving atop the Billboard 200 only 3 weeks after We Don't Trust You debuted at number one, that marks the shortest gap between new number ones by an artist since Future himself replaced himself at number one in 2017 in successive weeks with his self-titled album and then Hendrix, which is just spelled actually H-N-D-R-X-X. Both of them debuted at number one. He had one album come out right after the other, which doesn't really happen?
I was going to say, when I think of artists who drop projects super quickly, my like shorthand for that is Future. So here he is yet again doing, he actually took his sweet time with this one.
Yeah, I thought it was weird that they didn't have them come out one after the other.
They could have done that.
They could have had one super long album, like one certain Taylor Swift that we're about to talk about.
That's fair. But they also, you know, really dominated the Hot 100 and the Billboard 200 by doing it this way, a little more spread out.
Do we think there'll be a third album?
We really don't trust you. Yeah, we still really don't trust you. We are never, ever going to trust you again.
Also in the top 10 on the 200, Linkin Park's first ever greatest hits album, Paper Cuts, debuts at number 6, garnering the rock band its 11th top 10.
Have we already brought up Jason's book on this podcast yet?
No, we haven't, but we can right now.
Oh, we have to at this exact moment.
A friend of the podcast, OG Pop Shopper.
Yeah, I was like, he is the podcast.
Jason Lipschitz has written a book about Linkin Park.
I'm going to pull up the exact title and release date and all that so I can share it with the people. Billboard announced this end of last month.
Billboard had an exclusive?
Of course we had the exclusive. Actually, to be completely fair.
Did Jason write it?
No, he did not. But to be completely fair, Jason told me my book's going to be announced tomorrow. And I'm like, Billboard needs to announce that your book is coming out tomorrow. Like, this can't just go on the publisher, you know, Instagram. Like, it's your Billboard. We need to put it in Billboard. So Rania wrote an article about Jason's book. The book is called It Starts With One. And it is a biography of Linkin Park, and it is out October 1st.
Wow.
So very exciting. Congratulations to Jason.
I haven't actually talked to him about it. I wonder if he wrote it like during COVID or something. I wouldn't have time to write a book. I don't know how some of our coworkers have done this.
And this is not, if you follow Jason on social media, he also has an infant.
Yeah.
So he just whipped up a book while being a dad and full-time job.
Where's your book,
Katie? And what am I doing over here? Slacking is what I'm doing.
Where's my book on Madonna?
Where is your book on Madonna?
Where's your John Mayer opus?
John Mayer.
I don't know.
John, call me.
Lastly, we anticipate Taylor Swift's The Tortured Poets Department will make a massive debut at number one on the Billboard 200 next week. While its assorted tracks will probably swarm the Hot 100. So we are recording this on Tuesday morning. By the time you hear this, I'll probably have another story already up.
But there's still some notable numbers to talk about already.
So as of Monday afternoon, the album, in its first 3 days of release, which was April 19th through the 21st, had already earned, in the United States, 1.9 million units.
Oof.
That's her biggest week in the units era, which started in December.
Billboard's in our units era.
Well, that's the Billboard 200 started measuring the albums by equivalent album units in December of 2014.
Yes.
You can't really compare units to straight album sales back in the day. And of that sum, 1.5 million are traditional normal album sales, digital downloads, CDs, vinyl, cassettes. Of that sum, that's also the biggest sales week for any album since Adele's 25 debuted. Over 700,000 of that 1.5 million is vinyl. That's the single largest sales week for a vinyl album since Luminate began tracking sales in 1991, or as we sometimes call it, the modern era.
Yes.
Plus, the collected 31 songs across the deluxe edition of the album, which Taylor Swift has called a double album, has garnered 490 million on-demand official streams just in its first 3 days in America. That's the biggest streaming week for any album this year, and it's creeping up on Taylor's personal best, which was 549 million for Midnight's first week in 2022, and that only had 20 songs.
I want to say also, since, I mean, we are living in this moment, but in case the listeners aren't, the original album, 16 tracks, at 2 a.m. after the album had come out at midnight, you know, Thursday into Friday, 2 a.m., 15 new tracks came out called the Anthology. So the entirety, the 31-track complete situation is the Anthology album, basically a surprise double album. Well, I did want to bring up also, since we're talking about Taylor, the Fortnite video, which is the lead single from the album. This album was not preceded by any music whatsoever, so everyone heard Fortnite, saw the video and all that on Friday, and actually the video came out at 8 p.m. on Friday night. Keith, I got to talk to you about this video because did you know about the Dead Poets Society little reference in it? The album is called The Tortured Poets Department, so it's a little like fun little nod at that. But Ethan Hawke and Josh Charles are in the Fortnite video from Dead Poets Society, and they play little cameos, and it's actually like, it's a trippy little video. First of all, it co-stars Taylor and Post in sort of like a romantic relationship. I think we actually see both Taylor with Post face tattoos, and we also see Post with no tattoos.
Sure.
Which is a shocking sight to see, because as long as we've known Post Malone, he's had face tattoos.
He hasn't had them removed. It was purely special effects.
This is just special effects and or makeup happening. But it's a really lovely video. And in the video, like, there's kind of there's a theme of like institutionalization, I guess, sort of like going a little crazy after, you know, a relationship ends. And so Josh Charles and Ethan Hawke are actually playing like employees, like putting like electroshock therapy on Taylor, like in this scene. So anyway, I wanted to bring that up because I love that movie and I love those two actors. And I love that she like found an interesting way to include them in this.
Also, that helps me have a bit of sanity, because as I've written the phrase, the tortured poets department.
Oh, every time you want to watch the Right Society.
Yes.
Yes, the tortured poets society.
I actually got worried that I had posted a story this weekend with the word society. I had to go back. I'm like, did I? I'm like, nope, I didn't.
I check that album title every time I write it, because I think that's what it is. It's like there's a few phrases that are similar-ish that you are inclined to write. So
it's also a very long album title. I wonder if it's Taylor's longest album title, not counting her Taylor's versions.
Yes.
It is.
I mean, can't we unequivocally say that?
Our most
She's
album
normally one word, other than her like self-titled debut.
Huh.
And I'm trying to think, there's no other example, right?
Fearless, Red, 1989, Folklore,
Reputation, Evermore, Lover, Midnights. We're talking about one word except for the debut.
Interesting.
So that this is a choice.
That also plays into, I mean, she's also talked about how the album is purposely wordy and very
it's
poetic.
Verbose.
Verbose, thank you.
Yes.
Which plays into the album title.
It does. And I also wanted to point everyone to Billboard.com for Jason's ranking of all 31 of the tracks. So now he initially ranked the first 16 tracks.
But then surprise.
And then surprise, he added the extra 15 later in the day on Friday after getting a chance to live with them a little bit. And so you can look at his ranking from 1 to 31. I don't want to spoil the list, but I feel like I should mention his number one. Can we say his number one? And by the way, Fortnite is top five. The single is, I think, number five exactly. The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived is his number one, which fans are speculating is about one Matt Healy.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I
mean, it's pretty clear it's about Matt Healy.
not that you would know this off the top of your head.
Maybe I would.
But where do the bonus songs rank? Oh, are they generally in the first half of Jason's
funny
ranking?
You should say that, because I was actually trying to find the first bonus track that makes it so you know what, since you asked the question and since I was curious, I'm gonna figure that out right now.
And the only reason I ask is because sometimes people will dismiss kind of bonus tracks as like afterthoughts, as like, oh, we had some extra
right.
stuff in the bucket, here you go,
right?
And if these are actually like hidden gems, then that would kind of play into the idea of like, oh, this was always part of the concept of the album,
right?
We always meant it to be a double album.
All right, don't start playing on me. All right, there we go. So just from my cursory look, I think that the first bonus track, or, you know, anthology track, one of the 15 that came out at 2 a.m. that is included in Jason's ranking is So High School, which is ranked at number 7. So he has it pretty high. So, yeah, he's got some like sprinkled in very high. And I actually think that matches the vibe that people have been having. Like, I've heard people naming songs from the anthology 15 tracks as their favorite of the album. So I think people are really looking at this as a 31 track project when they're, you know, discussing it.
You as a Swiftie.
Yes.
Are you delighted or overwhelmed by 31 songs?
It's overwhelming, but also it's delightingly overwhelming. But that's me. I feel like I'm not a traditional Swiftie. I'm not the, like, you know, I'm not the everything she does is absolutely perfect all the time. Nothing is wrong. Everything's great. I'm not that Swiftie. That might be my neighbor, actually. Tara, shout out.
Hi, Tara.
But I am like pretty much across the board in love with the things that she does. And it took me more, like I didn't listen to every track day one. Like I took the weekend to go through the 31 tracks.
You also have two kids.
I have a lot of kids.
And a life.
And I wanted to really listen to, and I'm trying to work on my son, but he is not a Swiftie currently, and I'd like to fix that, but he...
Maybe this isn't the album this to might lead not him be, into it.
This is not the album. That's
let's,
fair.
Let's start off with Shake It Off.
Can we talk about the Spice Girls, Keith?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
If we go from an artist who just dropped 31 songs to an artist who has not released any new music forever, it's the Spice Girls, everybody.
We're desperate for Spice Girls music. So the Spice Girls reunited, quote unquote. I mean, they did. They physically reunited for an impromptu performance during Victoria Beckham's 50th birthday party on Saturday night. So all five members of the 90s girl group. Do I need to run through them? Do the people that listen to the show know them?
We've got Victoria
Beckham, a.k.a. Posh Spice. We have Jerry Halliwell Turner, a.k.a. Ginger Spice. Emma Bunton, a.k.a. Baby Spice. We have Melanie Mel C. Chisholm, and we have Melanie Mel B. Brown. They all reunited for a brief little dance routine to their 1997 song Stop during the celebration, which was held at a private club in London called Oswald's. And the surprise moment was caught on video by David Beckham,
the Spice Girls' number one super fan.
Oh my, it was so cute how he reacted like I feel like a lot of Spice Girls fans. Like he was like doing like a video, like selfie video, and he captioned the video, "I mean, come on."
And the girls mostly were doing the choreography from the
yes,
Stop video.
Yes, it was so cute.
And, you know, I think what was great about this was we actually have video footage, you
yes.
know, and video footage of them together.
Yes.
In Spice Girls mode.
Yes.
Lip syncing and dancing to a Spice Girls classic.
Acknowledging Spice Girls music.
Whereas we know that the five of them have interacted in the past.
Yeah, and have stayed friendly, obviously.
Stayed friendly.
Yes.
They've had meetings. They've said, oh, no, the five of us got together and we had a meeting about XYZ. And we're like, great, where's the pictures?
Next time meet in a recording studio.
Next time meet on a stage in America.
Right.
I mean, this just fuels, I think, increased speculation of will the five of them ever do something together? And it
yeah.
feels like all of them have been very, like, optimistic about the idea of maybe doing something, but they just need to get all of them aligned.
When they did those London shows, was Posh not part of it?
No Posh.
Right. And then, so the London Olympics is the last thing that Posh did, right? Because she did that.
It was either the
opening
last
ceremony, right?
Closing.
Oh, closing ceremony.
The last performance, I believe, from the Spice Girls was the London closing ceremony.
Which is 2012.
And then I think their last... And then after that, I think they appeared in public together as the Spice Girls. I want to say it was at the Spice Girls musical.
Oh,
the one that was
cute.
In London for a little bit. I think they appeared at the premiere of that.
We're not counting that.
And then when they went on the stadium tour in the UK and Ireland, which was a fairly brief-ish tour. Like,
remember our coworker Alexa flew to London to go see it? Yeah.
I know Adele saw it.
Yeah.
Not our coworker.
Yeah, she like, when they announced it, bought tickets, got her flight, did the whole thing, had to be there.
I probably should have gone, but I didn't. But I had seen the previous reunion.
Okay.
When the five of them got together and toured America and toured the UK.
Well, then you saw like the last real thing with Victoria.
Yeah,
basically that like the last traveling show with Victoria.
Yeah, and I know I would have loved to have seen the stadium show with just the four of them. And the four of them did great without Posh, and they I think all five of them were very, very smart to say, look, Victoria is still a Spice Girl. She's just not part of this touring show.
Yeah.
And she is always a Spice Girl, and she's always part of girl power, blah, blah, blah.
Well, it's funny because
she was just very focused on her fashion career.
Yes.
And she has her own fashion empire,
well,
for God's sakes.
It sort of does and sort of does not parallel our friends of NSYNC, which they obviously, the four of them, played with Ariana Grande at Coachella.
Minus Justin
Timberlake. And then we had this little... They've been giving us this little catnip this year with the new song from Trolls last year, the new Justin song this year, the little reunion performance that I was at, which was amazing. But I wouldn't mind and would totally go to a four-member NSYNC tour, too.
Without Justin?
Yeah, I would go to that.
I see. I think the sort of...
It would be sad.
The snag here is that... Victoria, while she did have some lead vocals, she was not primarily known.
She wasn't the co-front person of the group like Justin is.
Yeah. She obviously sings in the songs and she has moments, but the four of them could still carry on a production, a show, and fill in Victoria's parts.
Where it would be very obvious,
to fill in for Justin.
With all of them trying to sing, it's going to be May.
It wouldn't work. I mean, it could, but I don't know if it really would work. But it makes me wonder, does this mean we're going to get a Spice Girls tour?
See, that's what I was going to say. Like, what do you want? Like, because I think my answer to, I feel like a new song or new album would be really fun that does not necessarily have to include a tour if that's not going to happen. Doesn't it feel like we could steal some of Victoria's time for an album or a song?
I don't think,
you had the best idea and you pitched it to Mel C.
I did. Friend of the podcast, Mel C.
You pitched it. Keith had the best idea about basically a collab album called Girl Power, where it was like Spice Girls collabing with female artists. Or it doesn't have to just be female artists.
But it was, I gave Mel C an idea where, and she was very kind to listen, where I said, we understand like Victoria's busy and maybe she cannot like commit to maybe musical endeavors with the Spice Girls. You know, she's still always a Spice Girl. But if she say didn't want to record or could not record, maybe you could loop her in for like one song.
Yeah.
That is like the lead single from a proposed album called Girl Power. And then the rest of the album is the other four girls collaborating with women that they've been inspired by and women that have been inspired by the Spice Girls. So like say,
or like if Harry Styles wants to do it, no one's going to complain.
Fine. But like Little Mix and the Spice Girls, the Sugar Babes and the Spice Girls, or Girls Aloud and the Spice Girls as examples of girl groups who follow the Spice Girls, or maybe girls that like led up to the Spice Girls, Diana Ross from
Cher.
The Supremes, Cher, and so forth. Madonna, I don't know. Just throwing names out there. I mean,
I love that idea. I'd like to say that's what I'd like. I'd like that. I want that album.
I just don't think that most of these artists who do reunions or get back together, they tend not to want to bother with new music because there's not a whole lot of money in it.
Yeah.
And really the money is in touring.
Yeah.
So I think we'll be very, very lucky if we get any more music from NSYNC.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember when the Police reunited? They didn't do a new album.
That's so funny.
They're like, nope, we're in it for the cash, the nostalgia.
And they know it's just going to be a bummer when they play their new music at the tour and everyone's like, snooze.
But that's why I was so excited when the Rolling Stones put out a new album last year. Because they were, and we got to finally got a new song from Billy Joel,
Yeah.
In a world where we got a new Rolling Stones album.
That's a great
album,
Billy Joel song, by the way.
And a new Billy Joel song. Maybe there is hope that we might get a new Spice
Girls
material.
We'll hold out hope. We'll be here holding out hope.
All right. Shall we move on?
We shall.
It's time for the chart stat of the week. This week, the Eagles debut at number 30 on the Billboard 200. With its latest greatest hits compilation, To the Limit.
Wow, yes.
The Essential Collection, scoring the group its 12th top 40 charting album. Of course, Katie, you've already bought this, right?
Obviously.
Yeah. So it's their first kind of major greatest hits album since 2003. And thus, because that album came out 20 years ago, there was a new studio album in between.
Yes.
Long Run Out of Eden. Yep. So those hits are now on this album, along with there's like a bonus disc of live material, I think most of which has already been released. So you as a super fan probably already have all this stuff, but casual fan might be interested in this.
Sure.
So Katie, knowing that this is one of your favorite acts, which of these familiar favorites from the Eagles was not a top 40 hit on the Hot 100? Your choices are Get Over It, Life in the Fast Lane, Peaceful Easy Feeling, or Tequila Sunrise. Which of those was not a top 40 hit on the Billboard Hot 100?
I'm in between the last two options, Peaceful Easy Feeling and Tequila Sunrise, for my answer. I'm going to go with Tequila Sunrise.
You're correct.
Yes.
It peaked at number 64 in 1973. The other one that you were thinking about, Peaceful Easy Feeling, hit number 22 in 1973.
That's like my dad's favorite song of all time. I love that song.
That was right as they were kind of like developing before they exploded.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why those songs kind of peaked at positions that you might be confused
but
by.
But I lived through Get Over It. That was in the 90s.
Oh, yeah. Get Over It came from the 1994 reunion album, Hell Freezes Over, I believe.
Yeah.
That peaked at number 31. And then Life in the Fast Lane, peaked at number 11 in 1977.
That song, Life in the Fast Lane, to me, is such an 80s song that was written in the 70s. Like, when I think of that song, I could have been a Don Henley solo hit along with, like, Boys of Summer.
Yeah.
That's the vibe.
Would that have been Hotel California?
I think so, but let's double check before we say that.
I fell into a rabbit hole yesterday when I was looking up information on the Eagles, and their last studio album before they went on a very long hiatus and a breakup was The Long Run in 1979.
Yeah, and yes, it is Hotel California.
And that came out in 77?
Yeah. Again, I feel like a lot of those songs sound like what we think of, or what I think of, as like 80s, like early 80s rock.
Well, when you
listen ahead of their time.
When you listen to the production of Hotel California and Long Run, certainly, like, it sounds great.
Oh, yeah.
Just like, they sound immaculate and they sound so well produced. Also, I was kind of surprised. Now I'm falling into rabbit hole. I will stop.
This is my favorite kind of rabbit hole, an Eagles rabbit hole.
Through the Eagles' assorted studio albums, I think most people cite Hotel California as kind of like, oh, that's like the first one to get, or the first one to absorb. Do you agree? And if not, is there a secondary studio album from the Eagles that you're like, oh, yeah, that's the one to start with?
I mean, if I'm being completely honest, as like a child of, you know, Eagles fans, like, the greatest hits was what I came in on. So it's kind of
album.
I know, I'm just saying, it's kind of,
that's like me saying the Immaculate Collection from Madonna.
No, but it is. I mean, that's how that was my entry point. To be fair,
I'm not asking for entry point. I'm just saying, like, studio album.
My other problem is that my favorite stuff is like the sleepy stuff. So, like, I actually would say go to their debut album, because that's where Take It Easy is, which is like my favorite, like, probably my one that I like associate with like my childhood and Eagles the most.
So the Sleepy Country hits.
And then my dad loving Peaceful Easy Feeling. Yeah, that California country vibe, which I think for Hotel California, there was still a little bit of that string remaining, but they were a full blown like rock band at that point, right? They had Joe Walsh by then, who really brought the, you know, hard guitars and all that sort of thing. Whereas the early days is kind of my vibe, my Eagles vibe. Like the Desert Eagles, when I think of like, When I think of just like drive, like a long road trip through like a desolate space,
like the Long Road out of Eden.
Yes, exactly.
I don't think I've actually listened to the Long Road out of Eden. Is it a good album?
Yes, and they played a lot of that stuff. I actually went to that tour.
It's a double album, right?
Yeah,
I feel like
you're quizzing me. Let's find out.
No,
yes, it is a double album. It's their first double album, it says. But yes, I went to that tour.
They waited long enough, so they probably went to material.
I went to that tour, and they played, you know, a good amount of songs from it, and it sounds like classic Eagles. So yeah, I loved it.
All right.
Yeah.
We could talk about the Eagles all day.
Sure could. We'll always do that. And by the way, that was the Long Road Out of Eden tour was the last time I saw Glenn Frey perform live.
Before he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn Frey is one of the two I guess you would say he was like one of the two primary lead vocalists.
Yeah.
Because though the other members did all take turns.
Share things. No,
Don and Glenn really.
Don and Glenn were the co-frontmen.
But it was nice. Like when I was listening to, I was sifting through, I don't know, some of the songs. I was researching something, and I'm like, oh, funny, like Joe Walsh is in the City, which I knew from the Warriors movie, was actually on the Long Run, because even though he had done it as a solo hit, and I guess maybe the Eagles
with like the James Gang, I think he did it originally. Okay.
And then so like he sings that entire thing, even though there might be some harmony vocals from the rest of the band. Like Timothy B. Schmidt has like solo moments.
Oh yeah,
so it's really nice.
Randy Meisner, who just passed last year, he sang lead on Take It to the Limit.
Oh, really?
Which is one of their biggest hits, yeah. And yes, Timothy B. Schmidt, he does the lead on I Can't Tell You Why. Yeah, and when he had that hit, they were thrilled. They've told this story before where they were so thrilled because he was like, he came in after Randy Meisner left, and he was at that point the only one who didn't have like his own signature like hit. And then he had that one, and they're like, yes, he's got a hit.
I wouldn't say they were quite like Fleetwood Mac, where you could count on like all of the, like Christine McVie, Lindsay, and Stevie all really sharing like leads, because this was primarily Don and
I don't know if Don Felder ever had a lead. I mean, Don Felder had a lot of animosity with Don Henley.
Not the word I was
because he wanted to do lead, and they basically would always be like, if they would like give them a chance to sing it, and then if like Don or Glenn sang it better, they're like, it's gonna be a Don or Glenn song. And like Don, of course Don Henley's always gonna win that fight. It's Don friggin' Henley.
Well, maybe Timothy was just like, yeah, you're not gonna be able to do it.
That's
I can't
the
tell
thing with Take It to the Limit and with I Can't Tell You Why, these are for the very high men's voices, the tenor voices. They needed those guys that could do the high notes.
Also, like, In the City is very distinctly Joe Walsh.
Oh, yeah.
Like I guess you could see
that voice. No one can replicate that voice.
But I mean, you could see a pathway where like Glenn Frey could do it because he very much could do very rocky stuff.
Yeah.
But there was a little bit more grit, I suppose, in Joe's voice.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I'm not an Eagles expert, but clearly I fell into a rabbit hole this weekend when I was researching something. Anyways, there we have it, our chart set of the week about the Eagles, which turned into a full-fledged segment. Katie, we've reached the end of our big show. Any parting words?
Man, we covered a lot of my favorite things today, and I love it. Like, even you just had a throwaway mention of John Mayer. It was all in here. Justin Timberlake was there. Eagles were there. Taylor was there.
part of the reason why I was, like, researching stuff about the Eagles this weekend was because of this greatest hits existing, which led me. I love researching greatest hits albums and like what's on them, what's not on them. Mm-hmm. And they so infrequently come out. And because we had Linkin Park with a new one, and we have the Eagles with a new one. It made me think of Don Henley's two greatest hits, neither of which include Leather and Lace, his duet with Stevie Nicks, nor his Patti Smyth collaboration, Sometimes Love Just Ain't Enough, which I thought was really odd. But maybe it's time for a new Don Henley greatest hits. Don, are you listening?
It's got to be like a label issue or something. Like, it's probably the women were the primary artists or something. I don't know.
Who knows?
Who knows?
What song should we go out on?
I mean, you just mentioned Leather and Lace, so now I need to hear it. So let's go out on that.
We'll go out on that, and we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Lovers forever.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.